Before I start, let me say that in the spirit of the group meeting, I want to keep this informal, so don't hesitate and interrupt me if you have questions. And also, that's why I'm using the Blackboard. Now, before I start, let me also give a bit of context for how this work originated. So the presentation will be based on work and is soon to appear, hopefully, with Eric Ling and Ghazal here. So Eric Ling is a mathematician who was visiting the Fields Institute last fall. So I was also there in the fall, and the Fields Institute in Toronto was organizing a thematic semester on non-smooth geometries and their possible applications in relativity, and it gathered a bunch of pure mathematicians all the way to physicists and encouraged collaborations, and this is how this started. So we had this common interest, which was the issue of singularities in the early universe, and in particular in the context of inflation. And this is not a particularly new problem, but we felt like there was still some things that were unanswered, some gaps in the literature. So we revisited this issue, and I'll try to summarize some of the key results we found in this work. So this is a rather long title, but a short version could be just singularities before inflation, and singularities really broadly defined, and I'll clarify along the way geodesic incompleteness, extendability, and other types of singularities. So I'll make a sketch that I'll come back to throughout. So I'll try to make it nice. So just a sketch of the scale factor of the universe. And our premise is that inflation, let's say inflation happened in the very early universe. So there was a period of time during which the scale factor was accelerating. And the question of we want to ask is what happened before. So as the main question in primordial cosmology, what was the origin of the universe? Inflation is providing an answer for the origin of the structures, but it's not necessarily the final answer. It could still be something before, or if there wasn't anything before, well, how did it start? These questions remain unanswered. Some aspects of the question perhaps are more philosophical, but we believe there's still some interesting physics as well as mathematics to this question. Before I can attempt to answer the question, I need to set some ground rules, because depending on the rules we play with, we can have different answers. So in particular, I'm going to specify some assumptions . And the most important one will be that we're always going to be considering real and Lorentzian metrics. So, in other words, we have in mind being always in the regime of semi-classical GR. So, let me put it in quotes, because we might not have GR, but something that is like semi-classical GR, where in particular the metric will never become complex or change signature and become Euclidean. So we're not allowing, or we're not considering the possibility of a quantum prelude to inflation. So in particular, we won't be discussing the no boundary proposal, which could fit in this picture. Instead, we're just going to look at real classical metrics. And another assumption that we'll mostly work with, but I'll not all the time. So at the end, I'll discuss generalization. But for the most part, we'll be interested in flat FLRW. So we have our usual lineup. So the evolution of the universe is solely described by
the time dependence of the scale fact.
And why? Because this is going to rule out a lot of interesting resolutions to your question.
Well, there'll still be some non-trivial results. So that's one answer. And at the end, I'll discuss a result that will be for arbitrary metric. So we'll get rid of this assumption.
So for technical reasons, or?
Yeah, that one can say more and more easily when we restrict to this FRLW metric. Yeah. Do you have anything specific in mind that you thought?
Well, if it's pure De Sitter, then there's at least, well, there's one, you know, the global slicing. You don't.
Okay. I see what you mean.
The flat slicing you do, the open
slicing
you do, but it's resolved for different reasons.
Yeah.
So I just,
this will come into discussion. This will totally come into discussion. And what we'll see is that often we face ourselves with a limitation precisely because we restrict ourselves to this, to these coordinates. And then when we see, well, are there better coordinates that we can use to find what could have happened before? Yeah.
I'm sorry, about the first assumption, I've never heard any, I mean, I don't know in which quantum context we might have something else apart from that. What? Why is this an assumption that you need to make?
Yeah, so by this I mean that our background is classical, and there could be some quantum fields on top of the background. Now, if the background itself were quantum, then in particular, there's no reason for it to remain a real field. The metric could become complex. And an example is the no-boundary proposal, the Hartle-Hawking state. You would have an evolution from a Euclidean metric to a Lorentzian metric, and you could have an analytic continuation, which goes from the dt squared being purely imaginary to purely real in a complex way. So I'm not going to discuss that. That's what I mean.
This is a trick, like a computational trick that people do always, they weak rotate things. But is it, I never heard about this complex.
Yeah. Well.
No, people do.
What can I say?
That's good. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I just had just related to Matt's question. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought the point of inflation was to make the universe flat, homogeneous. So, is it okay to assume that it's flat before?
Yeah.
The point of inflation in the first place.
Very good question. So, basically, there are three possibilities that we could consider there, and they're all equally valid, I'll say. And we're just looking at one of them in particular. The others have been considered also separately, and you get different answers depending on if you have a closed universe or an open universe. So was there another question? No. Okay. I should be monitoring the chat. No, that's not relevant. Okay. Within, let's say, just the first assumption there, there are some well-known theorems, namely the Penrose and Hawking theorems, which tell us that essentially if we have some energy conditions, then they're going to imply geodesic incompleteness. Now, this is schematic, but essentially, if there's some energy conditions that are respected, then we sort of already know the answer in quite a lot of generality that we're going to have a geodesically incomplete universe. So one example of this would be if the strong energy condition is respected, then in particular, the scale factor is going to be decelerating. And essentially, the only thing that can happen is that the scale factor is going to zero in finite time. And we're going to have a singularity, a scalar curvature singularity at that point. However, the strong energy condition is quite strong. Even inflation does not respect the strong energy condition. And other even weaker conditions, like the null energy condition, can be relatively easily violated if we have quantum fields that are living on our curved background. So if we, in particular, if the energy conditions, including the null energy condition, are violated, then a lot of things can happen. And just one example, perhaps, would be that we have a bounce. So contracting the universe before a bounce. So this would be an example where the null energy condition would be violated. Or there could be sort of a phase of super acceleration. And before that, the universe was asymptotically Minkowski. So this regime would be violating the null energy condition. So there are different things that can happen if we violate the energy conditions. And those will be examples that are geodesically complete, and I'll show this in a minute. So those are situations where we would have sort of a pre-inflationary phase. And in that case, let's just say that it's hard to say things in great generality. Those are mostly case-by-case studies. Instead, if we ask, well, what if inflation was really the first phase of the universe, and the universe really started out inflating? Or in other words, if inflation was past eternal, it always happened, then what could be there? And in that situation, there may be two more possibilities. One would be that universe is inflating. I made the slope not ideal there, but it is inflating. It should not be linear, but okay. In finite time, it hits zero, and we have a singularity. And lastly, I'll try my best now. I should have taken a bit more space. We have sort of the same line, but this time, it's never going to hit zero in finite time, and instead, asymptotically going to go to minus infinity, and just like an exponential, just asymptote zero. Okay, so those situations would be, it would always be inflationary, whereas the other ones would not. So now let's address the first two words of the title after past, so geodesic incompleteness. So first, which ones are complete? Well, to answer this, what we do is that we look at the affine length of a null geodesic. And in flat FRW, this is the time integral of the scale factor. And we can see that this is going to go, since we're interested in the past, this is going to go to minus infinity as our physical time goes to minus infinity in the case of the two yellowish lines. So if the scale factor goes to infinity to the past, or if it goes to a constant, as if it was asymptotically Minkowski. And then, as I said, we won't say anything more than that. The ones that are perhaps more interesting are the ones that are actually potentially geodesically incomplete. And, well, the first case where this is certainly the case is if the scale factor goes to zero in finite time. So if A goes to zero as t goes to some initial time, which is not minus infinity, then it's not too difficult to show that one is going to have a scalar curvature singularity. For instance, just as an example, the contraction of the Ricci tensor could blow up there. So this would be, those would represent the x's here. So this would certainly be a scalar curvature singularity, likewise here. And definitely it is, yeah, it's a strong case of geodesic incompleteness in that case, as there is an actual blow up of curvature. Now, finally, the case where the scale factor goes to zero, but only asymptotically as time goes to minus infinity, this one is less obvious. And fortunately, though, there was an observation, a statement made by Burde, Gut, and Vilenkin, which provided an answer that is independent of energy conditions. So I'll quickly write down their statement. This is a 2003 paper. So if we, I'll simplify it a bit, but if we have in mind the Hubble parameter, and we compute an average of the Hubble parameter along null geodesics. So by that we mean they define this quantity H average over some interval. So in terms of time, we're going to be interested in a case where we're going to minus infinity and we stop at some final time. So this will be defined as the integral average, so lambda, the affine length at the final time minus the affine length at the initial time times the integral from minus infinity to the final time, integral in the affine length of the Hubble parameter. So they define this quantity, and they notice that when this quantity was, let me write it here, when this is strictly positive, then inevitably we have geodesic incompleteness. So in other words, the affine length at minus infinity is going to be finite. It won't go to minus infinity, as it should to have geodesic incompleteness. And perhaps an easy way to see it is that, well, if this is finite and we have a finite integral of a quantity that is always finite, of course this will always be finite. If for it to go to zero, either h needs to go to zero, or we have an affine length that is actually infinite, and that's precisely the case where we would have geodesic completeness. So yeah, that is the statement. Whenever the average Hubble scale is positive, we have geodesic incompleteness. Now, there are obvious limitations to this statement, the most obvious one being exact de Sitter. And the resolution of what is happening with exact de Sitter will be a nice segue into the question of extendability. So if we want to address the case of this blue line that is asymptotically going to zero at minus infinity, which might certainly be geodesically incomplete, okay, but what about extendability? So we'll look at the sitter as a warm-up. And let me use units where the cosmological constant is 3. So if we work with just the FRW coordinates, then I meant to write it in actually specifically. So for the sitter, we would have e to the 2t here in these units. And this is an expanding the sitter branch if we look at t going from minus infinity to the future. And if we compute the affine length of an all geodesic, this is just going to be the exponential. And certainly, this is always finite. Even as t goes to minus infinity. So it looks like the sitter would be geodesically incomplete in that way. But the story is not complete there, because we know that, well, perhaps these coordinates are not covering all of the spacetime. And for the sitter, then we would hope to extend this to a more global spacetime, specifically global de Sitter as we know it. And for instance, we would want to extend to something like closed de Sitter. Where it is obvious that, well, we don't really have geodesic incompleteness, and in fact, we don't even have any singularity. So a picture we can make of the sitter when written in these global coordinates is that of a hyperboloid in a higher dimensional space. And it's quite obvious in this case that, well, the expanding the sitter branch that was covered by the FRW patch is only half of the story, and in between we don't have a singularity, but instead a finite radius sphere. So we have more like a bounce that glues the contracting de Sitter branch to the expanding de Sitter branch. So this is explicitly non-singular.
And Isn't the A equals zero singularity along the light surface here?
Yes.
Isn't the flat branch?
Yeah. Okay. And in fact, let me draw a conformal diagram. So. So the FRW patch would be covering only the upper triangle, and this it would look like as the scale factor goes to zero, a null ray would be hitting a boundary in finite time, or in finite affine length. So this would be like a pass boundary, but really the whole global de Sitter would include also the lower triangle, and one could extend these null geodesics to the lower triangle there. So yes, the apparent singularity of the scale factor going to zero is along this light curve. Yeah. Okay. Now, if we want to generalize this to spacetimes that might not be exactly the sitter, what we'll do is to find some new coordinates that allow us to do this, that allow us to find these extensions in a relatively easy way. So specifically, what we'll have in mind are some Ennington Finkelstein like coordinates. So we have new coordinates. In particular, we're going to use lambda as a coordinate. So lambda would have the same interpretation as before, like an affine length of an all geodesic. So this would be a dt, or in conformal time, this is so a squared d eta. And we're going to have a new coordinate v, which is going to be eta plus r. So conformal mixing conformal time and radial coordinate, so that our line element, which previously was of this form, the R squared plus R squared. Now it's going to be, it's going to look like this. So minus 2d lambda dv plus a squared of lambda. Now the time coordinate really becomes like a lambda coordinate. Dv squared, and then plus a squared. Okay. Now, why is this useful? Let's just revisit the De Sitter example here.
That you could push up.
Just push that.
Yeah, I guess I'm not used to that. Okay, I'll try next time. So we just revisit the sitter. Our scale factor as a function of lambda this time is just going to be lambda. And our conformal time is going to be minus 1 over lambda. So our metric is going to be minus 2 d lambda dv plus lambda squared dv squared plus 1 plus lambda v squared d omega 2 squared. Okay. And the case where lambda is positive corresponds to the flat LRW patch that we had before. So lambda positive is like the A positive. This is like the exponential as a function of time that we had. But now it's quite obvious that, well, we could certainly extend this to the case where lambda is negative. And our metric is going to be well defined. And in particular, it's going to be non-degenerate at lambda equals 0. So this would be our extension, lambda smaller than 0. And the case where lambda covers the whole real line is then going to be all of the sitter. And indeed, as I said, when lambda equals 0, we're left over with the sphere here. So the metric is really non-singular. Now, as I said, the reason why these coordinates are quite handy is that we can then use them to generalize this discussion to spacetimes that are not exactly De Sitter. So we came up with some theorems that I'm going to state. So the first one is the following. So if the scale factor is asymptotically of the form e to the ht plus little o of e to the ht. And the little o notation means that if we subtract exponential to the scale factor, the function that's left is going to 0 faster than e to the ht. So in other words, a of t minus e to the ht divided by e to the ht is going to 0. So either this or the Hubble parameter is going to a constant as time goes to minus infinity. If that's the case, then our spacetime, so the manifold and the metric, so the spacetime admits a C0 extension. So C0 means continuous.
Question.
Yeah.
Does this depend on the assumption of three spatial dimensions? Or this more general?
I never thought about it. I don't think it does.
I think in one spatial dimension, there's one other case. Or A goes like T.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That is, A goes like T, that's like the open sitter case. Yeah. That's like the Milne-like universe, and a very similar statement holds in that case. Right, so I won't show the details of the proof, but I think one thing to notice is that for there to be an extension, we at least have to be able to reach the boundary of the extension in a continuous way. So let me come back over here. So this, our scale factor is going to zero in the asymptotic past as a function of time. So in terms of lambda, this is like lambda going to zero in the de Sitter example, and the scale factor is still going to zero there. But we want this radial part not to vanish, and to approach some value in a continuous way so that we can match it to an extension. So in particular, what is key is the product A times eta. So what is key in the proof is that A times eta goes to a constant, and in that case specifically it's going to be little h. I didn't say it. Little h is just a constant. So in the first situation where we have this asymptotic expression for the scale factor, it requires a bit of analysis to show this. But in the second situation, it's pretty straightforward. One can just take the limit as t goes to minus infinity of a eta, or if we will, eta over 1 over a. And notice that this is going to infinity. This is also going to infinity, and use the good old L'Hopital rule and take derivatives at the top and at the bottom. And what we're going to get is minus 1 over h. And by the assumption, this is a constant. So we recover it. Now, some remarks about the theorem. So there are two possible conditions that are going to give us this C0 extension. And they're really different in the sense that, well, the first one does not require any knowledge of the derivative of the scale factor. And this is unsurprising because this is just a continuous extension result. The second one is perhaps stronger in that sense, because we need to have a dot to compute h. But there are still functions that have this limit that would not fit in the first category. So they're really distinct in that sense. And another important remark about this is that this is definitely not an if and only if statement. In particular, if it were, then we would have an inextendibility result. And those are notoriously difficult to prove. In particular, we wouldn't be able to do that with some specific set of coordinates. We would have to have some other machinery to prove things that are independent of our coordinate system. And last remark about this is that this is really just a C0 result. So in particular, we don't know yet if we can compute a derivative of our metric. So we don't have necessarily a Christoffel symbol. We don't have curvature at this point. So this is it's a very weak kind of extension that we could get there. And obviously, then we can seek to generalize that. And we have similar statements for C1 and C2 extendibility. I won't state C1, but let me just show C2. So for C2, we would have the condition if the limit as time goes to minus infinity of h dot over a squared, if it exists and is the limit is finite, then we have the spacetime admits a C2 extension. Okay, some observations about this is that already for C0, the scale factor had to be like an exponential, had to approach an exponential, or the Hubble parameter had to approach a constant. Those two conditions are very reminiscent of the sitter, or in some sense, asymptotically the sitter. And in a similar way, if we had really, again, if we think of the sitter, Hubble parameter is a constant, Hubble dot should be zero. So if we approach the sitter, H dot should go to zero, which is good, but the scale factor is also going to zero. So in a sense, it's not enough to just approach the sitter for there to be a C2 extension. So interestingly, this is in some sense more than asymptotically the sitter here, where H, if we just had H goes to a constant and H dot goes to zero, this wouldn't be enough. And H dot has to go to zero faster than the scale factor goes to zero for there to be a twice differentiable extension, continuously differential extension.
Question.
Yes?
Do you have curvature here, or is it zero now?
This is still flat.
Flat, okay.
This is still flat. If it weren't flat, there'll be a K over A squared.
Question.
Yes.
Do you have examples of spacetimes which approach the sitter but are not extendable?
Yeah.
Are not C2 extendable?
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. Well, two things. One can construct some functions.
Could you repeat Sergey's question, because it yes. sounded like he was
sure.
giving it from the sounded like he was coming from outer space.
Okay, he asked if we have examples of spacetimes that would approach the sitter but would not be C2 extendable. So, okay, I'll give two answers. So one answer could be,
this one.
The middle one is.
Middle one would be best, yeah. The easy answer is that we can cook up some functions of time that would not satisfy this. So an example could just be A of t is e to the ht plus e to the 2ht. So this would be a scale factor that would respect the C0 extendability result. So a C0 extension would be possible. But in fact, already at a C1 level, this would not work. And definitely at a C2 level, if you compute h dot for this function, take the ratio to a squared, take the limit, you'll find that this blows up. But this is nevertheless very asymptotically the sitter, but it's not good enough for it to be C2 extendable. Now, this would be more or less a toy example, but in terms of actual, perhaps physically motivated, one thing we looked at are, for instance, Starobinsky inflation. If you take it and really sort of push it to the limit and assume that the potential holds for all field values and take the limit as the field value goes to infinity, so you would really approach the sitter. Nevertheless, the ratio h dot over a squared would blow up in that case quite badly. So it would not be a C2 extendable asymptotically the sitter universe. And perhaps a last example I can mention would be small field inflation, where instead, in that case, the field would have to roll, if we're looking at it backwards in time, the field would roll up to the unstable point at the middle of the potential. And that would be an asymptotically the sitter limit, which would be C2 extendable.
Okay.
Yeah.
So next, that simple example you have up there, you try to go to that coordinates that you have up in terms of lambda and beta. What happens at lambda equal to zero?
So you could, you wouldn't be able to take a derivative and match it to another space-time and have a continuous...
Is it like a power law at that point, or what?
It was diverging, right?
Yeah, the thing is, it's hard to write this as a function of lambda because you have to be able to invert it. You need to integrate it and invert it. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to show an exact, show it exactly. But
perturbatively, probably. If this,
yeah. And it confirms that you cannot take the derivative of it. Okay, now the observation I want to make is that, nevertheless, if we're in some sense asymptotically the sitter and we have the Hubble parameter going to constant and h dot going to zero, then interestingly, we never have any kind of scalar curvature singularity. So, no scalar. Curvature singularity. For instance, if we just compute the Ricci scalar, we have 12h squared plus 6h dot. And certainly, if h goes to a constant and h dot goes to zero, this is fine. And you can compute similarly the contraction of the Ricci tensor, Riemann, and higher order. There are always going to be polynomials of h squared and h dot, which are always going to be finite. But again, interestingly, this notion of scalar curvature singularity is not the same as the notion of an extendable spacetime. Rather, what is more related to extendability is the notion of the curvature in a frame that is very much like the lambda v coordinates. So one where we can approach the boundary along null geodesics. So specifically, if we're looking at a parallelly propagated frame, and we compute our curvature in that frame, so say we compute the Ricci tensor, the lambda-lambda coordinates, components, rather, of the Ricci tensor, then what we have is minus 2 h dot over a squared. So this kind of quantity appears in the components of the curvature tensor when looking at a frame that is parallel along null geodesics. And so if this diverges, then what we say is that there's a parallelly propagated, for short, PP, curvature singularity. So this notion is not necessarily well known, but it's discussed, for instance, in Hawking and Ellis. And so what we find here is that while there's no scalar curvature singularity, there's still some other type of singularity, still curvature singularity, but it's specific to some coordinate system. So it's not something, it's not, we won't have anything that is an invariant that will blow up, but rather components specifically in that frame are going to diverge. When that's the case, then we wouldn't satisfy the hypothesis here that would give us a C2 extension. So perhaps I can just make a sort of a diagram of how this all relates. So I started with geodesic incompleteness. And within the class of spacetimes that would be geodesically incomplete here, we would have some that are extendable, some that are not. So for instance, we would have the ones that are C0 extendable. Within this class, we would have some that are C1, C2, etc., up to C infinity. Or another way of looking at it is that, well, within our class of geodesically incomplete spacetimes, we would have some that have that are free of scalar curvature singularities, so scalar curvature non-singular. And within those, we would have some that are nevertheless singular in the sense that they have this PP curvature singularity.
Excuse me.
Yes.
When you say something is inextendable, you mean in any way, or by inextendable condition by being asymptotically the same?
Okay. Good question. So I hope I didn't say that if this is not respected, it's inextendable. That's not the case. So this is really, it's only an sufficient condition. So the converse, we don't know. So inextendability, once again, results are very hard to prove because they would have to be independent of the coordinates we're working in. If we can find an extension, then this direction is good. But the other way around is hard to prove. Nevertheless, here, if h dot over a squared diverges, and we just maybe don't know if an extension exists or not, all I'm saying is that we cannot apply this theorem. But certainly, we have a PP curvature singularity. So there's something bad, relatively bad, happening in the spacetime. Now there's one before I...
Oh, question. I mean, this could be a coordinate singularity. We say bad is the sum.
Yeah, it could still be a coordinate singularity only in that case. And that's the whole point of this notion, is that it's specific to a coordinate system or a certain frame in which we're looking at the curvature.
You're now, I guess, up there.
Yeah.
See,
so. Exactly. So very quickly. So this was C2 and sort of a corollary. We can apply this and get all the way to C infinity. It's not really an immediate corollary, but somewhat non-trivial. But it turns out that if H dot, let's write it this way. If h dot over a squared is analytic in the scale factor, if we view this as a function of the scale factor and we look at a neighborhood as the scale factor goes to 0, and if this function is analytic, then there's going to be a C infinity. It's going to admit a C infinity extension. So exact distributive space would certainly be an example because this would be equivalently zero, identically zero is what I mean, and therefore there is a smoot extension that is possible in that case. Okay. To finish, I want to discuss the situation when we don't restrict ourselves to isotropy and homogeneity. So going really beyond FRW and just changing coordinates, there are some things we can say that are more general. So to do so, let me step back and discuss another aspect within FRW, which is that of a conformal extension. So if we revisit, again, the de Sitter, or asymptotically de Sitter case, then one can observe that we can write down our metric to be where the scale factor would be one that is, in some way, past asymptotically de Sitter, in some way that is conformal to exact de Sitter. Let me use a hat for the Sitter time coordinate. This would be it's not the sitter, and this would be an arbitrary scale factor that is close enough to the sitter. And for the sitter, there's another conformal transformation we can do that is quite neat to understand it in a more global sense, because this is, again, just in the flat FRW patch, which is to conformally map it to the Einstein static universe. So if we had now another conformal factor, then we could write it in this way. Or this is just the line element of the Einstein static universe. And so what we see is that we have some sort of total conformal factor that relates our arbitrary metric, which is asymptotically the sitter, to the sitter or to a global Einstein static universe in this way. So we would say that if this conformal factor has a well-defined limit and is never singular, then we have a conformal extension this way. So for instance, if we have, again, something that is like asymptotically the sitter, where we would have h goes to a constant, then one can verify here, for this to be a conformal transformation, omega would have to respect some equation, and one can check that in this case, indeed, omega would go to a constant as well. So this type of conformal extension could work. Okay, now I'll move here. Lastly, we came up with a theorem which now does not specify the form of our metric. So we're not necessarily assuming homogeneity and isotropy, but instead the statement sort of goes the other way around in this case, and it starts by the assumption that there is a conformal extension. So say that our spacetime has a C0 conformal extension. With conformal factor omega and some past boundary B. Then there are a series of assumptions that are needed. I'm just going to state a couple that are most important. So at this point, I never specified any field equations. I was not saying, well, we respect a certain set of field equations. All that matters is that we had a metric theory with real metric. But this time, we're going to specifically say that we respect the Einstein field equations. So let me write it this way. Specifically with a perfect fluid. So P and rho are pressure and energy density. And so the spacetime admits a conformal extension. And moreover, we're going to assume that we know that everything here conformally extends. So specifically, well, we already know the metric conformally extends, but also the energy density, pressure, and curvature, particularly Ricci, they conformally extend. Meaning we can take in a C0 way. So we can take continuous limits to the boundary and nothing diverges there. If those are satisfied with a couple more technical assumptions, but are not crucial for the discussion here, then the result is that the pressure has to be minus the energy density on that past boundary of the conformal extension. Okay, what does this say? So this is saying that asymptotically, whatever our conformal extension is of a spacetime that presumably is very close to the sitter, so it's asymptotically the sitter, but really this is saying, well, if that's the case, then definitely on that past boundary, the equation of state has to approach that of a cosmological constant. It has to be that of the sitter. So it can be nothing else. And in particular, the contrapositive is telling us that, well, if you have anything else that is not a cosmological constant on that past boundary, then what fails? Well, perhaps the Einstein equations fail. That could be the case. But even if there are curvature corrections, we believe that the statement might still hold. I mean, this is a conjecture at this point, but it could very well still hold. I think what could fail, what most likely fails, is the extendability. So the notion of these physical quantities being extendable beyond the boundary, the spacetime, the metric being extendable, might very well fail. So, as I stipulated, inextendability results are hard to prove, and maybe this is a first step towards such an inextendability result. Now I'll just put a question mark because that is not a proof, but it is pointing in that direction. Now how can we interpret this? Well, if we were in FRW again, just to connect with our intuition, this would not be particularly surprising because we have our Freeman evolution equation. And so if Hubble dot is going to zero, then certainly we can expect the pressure to approach minus the energy density. Right. But recall, this is going... This is on the past boundary where the scale factor is going to zero. And we have our Freeman constraint equation, which if I list what could be in the universe, it could be a cosmological constant, there could be curvature, matter, radiation, possibly shear, if we allow for Young Q1. And if any of those components are there, dynamically, if we're looking at the past limit of the universe, we would all expect those to dominate over the cosmological constant, especially the shear. And that would be more like the usual picture of a Kästner singularity, an approach to singularity that is highly anisotropic. So having p equals minus rho as a sort of an initial condition, it looks very special in that way. And so perhaps the message that this is telling us is that for there to be an inflationary cosmology that is non-singular, it would have to be very special because everything else is pointing toward either an inextendability or some kind of singularity to the past. So, I'll stop.
Questions?
Are the extendable surfaces always null? Every example I can think of, they are. Do you have an example where it's not?
No, I think they would, I don't know. I think they would all be null.
Can you change this to a more geometrical formulation where it's just something about null surfaces, like the properties of null surfaces or something?
Perhaps.
Yeah.
perhaps. And perhaps this, I didn't think about it. I haven't thought about it. But yeah, maybe that's a way that would allow us to state things more generally.
Yes? A more simple question. I guess you kind of set the stage by considering inflation and stuff like that, but just by your talk, there's nothing really preventing you from considering some kind of other... Say you think you have advancing cosmology, then
yep.
you could have advancing...
Yep. Yeah, I drew it there.
Same machinery and kind of, because you know you have some
yes.
fancy models where you don't go from like contraction to inflation, right? You just
yeah.
go from contraction to say FRW expansion,
yes.
right?
Yeah.
And then I guess the same would apply, right?
Well, the same would apply. That, so the discussion was
about the past, right?
About the past where the scale factor is going to zero, and where we have geodesic incompleteness, and asking, well, in what sense is this a singularity, really?
Just,
is it extendable or not? So,
I'm just thinking about this paper, which semi-recent, where they were looking at exactly the same question, but for bouncing models. And I think the argument was there that it is incomplete in the sense that on average, even though you have a bouncing model, your average scale factor kind of is like the sitter.
Right.
So,
okay. So this would be, yeah, the sort of a cyclic universe
yeah.
that is an average... looking like the sitter,
right.
where, yeah, exactly, the average Hubble parameter is
right.
approximately a constant, but where you have these oscillations in the scale factor, but they're always getting smaller and smaller. So this would apply, essentially, in the limit to the
right.
to sort of the last bounce, the last cycle of that,
right.
Definitely.
Online audience, questions? Is there anyone?
Could you say one more time the final result here, which ends with the conclusion then P equals minus rho on B minus?
Yeah. You want me to repeat the sort of my take on that result?
Yeah. What is the what if what then that is true?
Okay. If I should have stopped here. So if there exists a conformal extension to our spacetime, and we have the Einstein field equations, they're satisfied in the original spacetime up to the boundary,
and
everything there conformally extends to the boundary. So the energy density, the pressure, the curvature, they're all continuous all the way to the boundary. Then on the boundary of that conformal extension, the equation of state has to be that of a cosmological constant.
And a conformal extension means that you can do a conformal transformation, which is everywhere non-zero, to a metric that is extended.
Yeah. Sort of like this example here. Yeah.
It sounds pretty strong. That's a theorem?
Yes.
Hmm.
Okay, the paper is not out. and I know one of the three authors has not reviewed it, so... but I feel confident.
It's two sides of a theorem.
for example, if I imagine the case of the null boundary and de Sitter,
yeah.
And then I imagine that in a little strip around that boundary, I just varied the equation of state away from W equals minus one.
Mm-hmm.
But wouldn't that be an example of a metric that...
This goes in line with what I was trying to say afterwards, that if really on the boundary, in the approach to the boundary, then you don't quite have P equals minus rho. Then the result would say that, well, the premise fails. So that conformal extension cannot exist. Or some curvature or some energy density, those quantities could not have had a continuous limit to the boundary. So really that space-time is not conformally extendable. So it's saying that on the boundary, in that limit, it has to be exactly a cosmological constant. Any perturbation would not be allowed.
I mean, think about it this way. If you've got a little fleck of dust at past infinity, and you stick it in De Sitter, and you want it to go through that null surface, it's infinitely blue-shifted at that null surface. And so that little fleck of dust, no matter how small it is, it's a huge perturbation, right? Super,
yep.
Super restrictive, for sure.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Somehow. What if I took a different? Okay. Sorry. Let me not. I think I need to think about it offline. But anyway, interesting.
Sure.
Interesting result. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, everyone.